When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And then everybody in that room is offered the same estate plan.
The same plan.
Everybody gets the same binder, which to me, like, that should be a red flag. Like, so many red flags.
Someone says everybody needs XYZ, that's a red flag.
Hello, and welcome to Financials Podcast Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and also a CFP, which is a Certified Financial Planner. And I am here with my guests today for expert session, Jen Gumbel. Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for joining me.
Happy to.
So you are an attorney with a focus in estate planning, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, estate planning, I feel like, is something that people overlook a lot. And when it's overlooked, it can tend to turn into a really terrible nightmare that will last years.
Absolutely.
Literally years. It can take very little time to get it organized. And if you do not have it organized, it can drag out for years. And it doesn't even need to be your necessarily problem. It could be something your parents did that could take you years to unwind.
Absolutely. Yes.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about why you got into law and then how you decided to focus on estate planning?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of connected because I wasn't one of those lawyers that always knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a teacher. In undergrad, I would go to classes. I started out with preschool and then elementary and high school. And I just realized that the classroom setting and getting kids to be interested in something they had to be wasn't too fun for me.
forcing them.
Yes. Yeah. And I happened to shadow a small town attorney. And what I noticed is that the type of law he did, you know, estate planning, probate, real estate law, business law, that kind of stuff is really just teaching. You know, people come in with a question, they want to know the answer, and you don't have to get them hyped up to find out, you know, to learn about it. They're already wanting to know. And so that's what drew me into it. We joke that we're the indoor cats of law, where we help prevent problems and try to avoid showing up in court in the future.
Right. Yeah, indoor cats mean you don't have to leave the office to go to a court. Yeah, no, I like it. And I would 100% agree with you. I feel like estate planning, that aspect of it, is a lot of education. Mm-hmm. Because it's not something that you go through often, I would say. What do you think? What would you say? So why don't we start with the definition of estate planning, or kind of a broad overview of what estate planning is? And then maybe you could even tell us, like, how often do you think you need to do estate planning?
Yeah. So estate planning, I think of it as thinking through the legal issues that will come up when you die. And if you become incapacitated. And when you think about it that way, you understand that this is something that every adult should be doing. This isn't something that you only do if you're wealthy. If you have wealth, then yes, there are certain legal aspects of that to address. But even beginning when you're 18 and you have that autonomy over over your own decisions, then you should be thinking through, well, you know, if something happened to me, if I get into a car accident, I want to tell the court who I want to have do things for me, or even better, maybe put people in place to be able to do things so they don't even have to ask the court.
Right, because I think that there's a misunderstanding that if you do nothing, you're fine. But if you do nothing, then the court makes your decision, right? So right. It's not that you, so you can either choose your own set of instructions or you can go through the state instructions, but you're going to use instructions one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And particularly, that goes into the question to the common question of, well, if I don't have a will, what happens? And if your assets are stuck in your name and there's nothing, about that, asset that says where it goes next and you haven't done a will, then the court is going to do what the state presumes you would have wanted to do. Based on your family tree. And that might work okay, or that might be a complete disaster.
Yes. And let's bring up so I could tell you what the court system like, and it's specifically the probate court, because that's the court that determines what's going to happen to your stuff if you didn't decide for yourself, your default instructions. In our area, locally, it is running because with COVID and everything.
Yes.
And they're a little short. I think they're a little short staffed before COVID. Mm-hmm. I think a basic probate, meaning nothing complicated, is like 24 months. But
we've seen
it go up to 4 years.
Wow. So let's take a step back and talk about what's the role of the probate court? Avoiding probate, what does that mean? Like all of that stuff. So probate, just probate court in general, that's the court that deals with these issues of someone died and we have legal issues to deal with, or someone's incapacitated and we have legal issues to deal with.
Can I highlight, a legal issue could be that you had a 401k and you never put a beneficiary. It could be,
absolutely.
It doesn't have to be like this huge wealth. It could be like your 401k from a company you had for a couple of years. Let's just say it's $35,000 and you didn't put a beneficiary.
Exactly. Yep. So by far, the vast majority of issues that a probate court deals with is someone died and there are assets that are stuck in their name that require a personal representative to be appointed. So I'll talk through, I'm licensed in Minnesota. And so I'll talk through how the rules are set up in Minnesota because it kind of illustrates why you would ever show up in probate court. So when someone dies, almost everyone is going to have two different kinds of assets. They'll have assets that already tell us where they're supposed to go. So going back to a 401k, many times when someone sets that up, their HR person or their financial advisor is saying, well, who should get this? Who should inherit this? And when you give them a name and they put that name as a beneficiary, then your 401k is saying, here's where it goes next. Okay. But if for some reason you don't do that, or it just doesn't say where it goes next, then it's stuck in your name. And by default, it goes into your estate. Okay. Now in Minnesota, we have two reasons why an estate needs the court to put in place the personal representative. Okay. So the personal representative is the person who's responsible for getting those stuck assets to go where they're supposed to go. And in Minnesota, we need the court to do that if the assets are over $75,000 or include real estate, okay? Everything else is kind of considered a small estate, so you can do something easier.
And so this varies by state because New York State, because that's where I practice, is not as an attorney, as an advisor. Small state exemption is $30,000, hard limit.
Much smaller.
So much lower. Well, New York likes to make a lot of money on people that live there.
Right. And the important thing to note is that I'm talking about assets. I'm not saying whether or not you have a will, and that's a common misconception. Yep. People think, well, I have a will, so now I've avoided probate. And that's not how it works. The will actually tells us what to do in probate. They tell the court who you want to have as personal representative. They tell the court where you want your assets to go. And it's the assets that themselves that say whether or not it gets to the level where the state says, okay, we need to have a court confirm who this person is.
So a will and probate, or no will and probate, go hand in hand. So if you've done nothing, you go to probate. If you've done a will, you go to probate.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yep. It's all a matter of what is stuck in your name. And this is true no matter what state you're in. That's how probate happens, is the amount of assets that are stuck, or maybe the kind of assets that are stuck, real estate interest in Minnesota. If those things are not telling us where they go next, then the only person who can get those things to move is the personal representative appointed by the court. If you've done a will, then you're telling the court who you want them to put in place.
Oh, dear. So now there might be some people listening being like, I don't really need to worry about this. And fair, if you're a young person, statistically, you're unlikely to die. But mm-hmm. I will tell you why you do need to worry about this. Because if your parent has done nothing, you will be cleaning up this mess.
Because exactly. Yes. You will have a mess on your hands.
You will literally have a mess. And obviously, I can't disclose people, but I have had multiple young people come to me when their parents did nothing, died suddenly, and they literally had to fly to other states because yes. now they don't live where the parent lives. So mm-hmm. they have to fly to the state. They have to hire an attorney in the state. They have to go through probate mm-hmm. in that state. And a lot of the times, not always, but the parent died suddenly because it wasn't expected, which is why there was no plan in place. Mm-hmm. And so now they're like digging for documents, going yes. through a probate court in another state where they don't live. It usually happens because that's how the world, you know, how life happens at a very inconvenient time. It's never like, exactly. I had nothing to do this summer. I totally wanted to fly.
This is the perfect summer for me to deal with legal issues.
I really wanted to fly home and dig through my dad or my mom's stuff and then deal with this.
Yes.
So even if you think it's not important for you, I hope it doesn't happen, but it happens a lot to people, especially as our parents start to age, that mm-hmm. they didn't put a plan in place. You could be dealing with this from a parent or even a relative if you're the next of kin determined by mm-hmm. the state.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, for people who are married, and even importantly for people who are not married but have a significant relationship in their life where they're sharing household expenses yeah. and things like that, or starting to combine, you know, maybe they're keeping some of their assets separate, or they're combining some things, like they own a house together but maybe have their checking account separate. That issue of where do my assets go when I die and how does it get there? It's so extraordinarily important to think through, because if something happens to you, and you know, if you're young, it's statistically unlikely, but if it happens to you, it's going to be a mess if you haven't thought that stuff through. And things can absolutely go off the rails in exactly how you don't want it to go if you haven't thought that through.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so probate is going to be to read, basically they read your instructions in your will and then they determine it. If you don't have a will to read and you didn't take care of things, then mm-hmm. the state determines. So Minnesota is different than New York. I'm sure all the states are a little, mm-hmm. vary a little bit. They'll mm-hmm. we'll decide what to do.
Yes.
If you want to avoid that whole thing, how mm-hmm. do you skip probate desire to?
So how do I avoid probate? Well, the way to avoid probate, it goes back to remembering how probate happens. It's because assets are stuck and not telling us where they go. And so the way to avoid probate is to get as many of your assets to say where they go as possible. So for example, that 401k with that beneficiary designation, that 401k is saying this goes to your spouse or your, you know, your parents or your kids or whoever you've listed as the beneficiary. Okay. So you think through each of your assets, your retirement accounts, your checking accounts, all of your financial instruments, your car, your
house.
Home. Yeah. All of those things that you own. And you think, okay, when I die, how does this move? So I'll give you a really good example of a house.
Okay.
Between a married couple that every once in a while we run into here in Minnesota because of how we do real estate ownership, that illustrates this pretty well. So most couples, you know, most married couples will own their home together. And the deed lists both of their names. And in Minnesota, you can own real estate in two different ways. This is fairly true across all of the states. You can either own it where each of you are co-owners, but that's it. And the other way to own it is that you're co-owners and there's a right of survivorship for the surviving owner. And most married couples should have that ownership that way, because that's how they want their assets to transfer. One spouse dies, surviving spouse becomes the owner.
Because of the survivorship clause.
Right. And in my state of Minnesota, if you don't have that survivorship clause on the deed, it doesn't matter if you're married. That interest of your spouse who has just died, you just lost pretty much your person, right? You have to go through a probate process where you'll probably be appointed as personal representative. And the house will probably go to you, and you'll end up signing a deed to yourself when the deed originally was just missing two, you know, just missing a small little phrase.
That fine print.
Yeah. and so every once in a while we run into situations where we have to open a probate, you know, just because the deed didn't say what it needed to. And so that's where.
And what is it? Know. What does it cost? Like, I know approximately in New York, which is obviously expensive because of the time it takes. You know, that we're the court, the local court, so not all of New York State. I'm just saying this one specific area is a bit delayed, especially with COVID. What does it run about in your area?
In my area, I'm outside of the Twin Cities, so we're a little bit. You know, we kind of have that not Twin Cities discount. I'm in Rochester, Minnesota. The probate expenses tend to run, I would say, beginning at about $4,000 between the court, the attorney, and we have to publish notice of the probate proceeding. But then as complications arise, that can add to the cost. So, for example, if you did your own will and you didn't get it signed correctly, then that can be a reason why we have to have go in front of a judge instead of just having stuff signed off by the court, and so that adds to the expense and the delay.
These are expensive mistakes. So $4,000 starting costs in Minnesota and New York. I think the starting cost is like $6,000.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a pretty fair ballpark, and that's on the low end. You know, keep in mind if you're in, if you're in Miami or Los Angeles listening to this, you're probably not going to be able to get this done for $5,000.
And, you know, what you just brought up with the house, I've seen that happen. And then I've seen it because typically the spouse is appointed next, but this particular court went to all five children who lived in different areas, and they all had to sign off on the house being retained by the other parent, the survivor parent, and they all had to sign off. And then you would have it. One of them got married in that time frame or had changed the name in their time frame. And so all the documents were in place. And then they said, oh, well, that's not your new name. You've updated your name since all five FedExes have been received by the court. So we're going to redo the whole thing. And that's all more charges. Like that wasn't like, oh, we're doing it for free.
Right.
Rebill you. We're going to redo the whole thing. We're going to rebill you.
Right. Well, and I mean, there are some really kind of whacked out scenarios that can play out when you haven't put your own plan in place. So for example, Minnesota has a very archaic law that says, it's a really stupid law. If I ran the law in Minnesota, this would be my like first queenly act of Minnesota would be, the homestead. This is going to sound so weird. If you own your home so if your home is stuck in your spouse's name and there's no will, then, you know, so let's say you get married and your spouse bought the property before you were married and you guys never like think to change the.
Yeah, never changed anything.
You're just like, whatever, you know, like that's legal stuff. We're not fancy enough for legal stuff. We're not going to worry about it. And you have kids maybe your spouse has kids or whatever, and the spouse dies and the interest doesn't get to you. As a spouse, you have a right, to a homestead, but it's a right during your lifetime
and
it's a life estate and you end up owning it together with the kids. Now think about if the kids are small and if you need to do something with that house, that means that they can't sign off on it. You have to go through the court to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen those kind of court hearings where literally, you know, even if you're the parent, this isn't a blended family. There's no like.
Yeah, and they're like, we need Sally
and their own kids.
Yeah, we need Sally to sign. You're like, Sally's three. Sally doesn't talk.
Yeah, so, right. And so we need to go to the court, and the court's going to say, "Mom, we know you're the mom, and normally we'd let the mom do for the 3-year-old, but in this case, you have competing interests because you're the, you know, and so we're gonna put in place somebody independent to watch out for Sally, and just end up signing off on this deed. And there's so many ways things can get messy. If you're not thinking things through.
Oh my gosh, it sounds like a nightmare. And I will say that even I don't think, as we just pointed out, you definitely don't need to be wealthy. You just need to have anything. If you just have anything and you're an adult, you should look at this.
Yes. Yeah. So let's throw out a really basic scenario, right? let's say you're 18 and you have a car and you have a checking account. You're an awesome, like you're a gold star human being. Like, I will give you a gold star because you're thinking, you know, I'm 18. I'm probably not going to die, but maybe. So what should I do? And the answer is pretty straightforward. You have your autonomy, and let's say you're 18 years old and you implicitly trust your parents. Your parents are married and they get along and they communicate, you know, like they have a good relationship and you have a good relationship with them. You trust them implicitly. Okay, well, let's talk about a few things. If you get into an accident, the hospital is not going to give information to your parents automatically. You need to set that up because you're an adult. And the hospital is going to say, you know, parents don't just have the right on their adult children. So you need to set up a healthcare directive telling the hospital, hey, talk to my parents, give them information. That's fine with me. If you trust them to deal with your finances, then think about a financial power of attorney where if you are laid up in the hospital, then they can pay your landlord the rent or find out what the outstanding rent is or deal with the utilities, things like that. And then as far as your assets, you might just think through, okay, I have my car and I have my checking account. Well, on your checking account, you can go to the bank and say, if I die, this goes to my parents. And that doesn't even involve an attorney. But you're asking the question, how do my assets move and how does it get there? And at 18, maybe you're not doing a will yet, but you're still thinking through the questions.
Just to make sure you're covered. And because the thing that I like about estate planning is you're preventing a financial or legal tragedy when typically it's the whole reason has been triggered by a personal tragedy, right?
Correct. Yes.
So I think it's a worst case scenario is to experience a personal tragedy, whether that's a severe car accident or a death with someone close to you. And now you're dealing with a financial and or legal tragedy in the respect of this is not what you want to be dealing with when you're going through a personal tragedy like that.
Yeah. And the vast majority of people never deal with this stuff until there is that personal tragedy. Right.
Yeah.
And so particularly if they haven't, you know, done their own estate planning or thought through this stuff before, they're learning this stuff and then having to do all of this administrative stuff on top of, you know, the grieving, the wrapping their head around all of that, you know, all of that. They're adding a legal scramble onto everything else.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. So let's talk through. So 18, least amount of stuff, least complicated. So let's fast forward and like talk about someone in their 30s or 40s. So a little farther along, have acquired some things, but wouldn't consider themselves fancy. Or as I would say, because I would say you hear a lot about estate planning and where it's like terrible when like Michael Jackson didn't have a will, right?
Yeah, right.
A lot of famous people with huge net worths. And I think the problem is they always think they'll do it later, right? Like I'll figure out who that's going to be and I'm going to do it later.
Like the most famous probate we will probably ever have in Minnesota is the Prince Estate.
Yes.
He did nothing. He did zero. And like the night and day difference between if he had done some planning and what's going on now, I can find out everything that he owned because he didn't do planning.
Right, because it's public. Anything that you own is public record.
If it's administered through the court, it's going to be public record. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, famous people always don't do it. And I really think it probably comes down to they have to make a lot of decisions and they just decide that they're not going to make those decisions because they have so much stuff. But let's talk about like a normal person in their 30s or 40s. So you have, let's say, retirement accounts, you own a house, spouse, no spouse, kids, you know, it's a little more complicated.
Right. Yep. So let's talk about having a spouse, having kids and a house and retirement.
Okay.
So the first thing you're thinking through is if I die and my spouse is living, you certainly want to avoid as much legal, like you want to take all of the legal issues that you possibly can off of your plate. Because think about that scenario. Your spouse died.
Yep.
And you have kids that are grieving. You have to parent kids that are grieving and you're grieving losing your person, right? So you want to minimize the legal issues as much as possible. For most married couples, there's no benefit to a probate. And there's no need to have any sort of rules or oversight. You're just looking to transfer assets to the surviving spouse. So for most married couples, making sure your house is owned together with that right of survivorship.
Okay.
Making sure your 401k has the beneficiary listed, making sure that that old life insurance policy that your parents took out for you when you were in high school, just because it was cheap back then, that you've updated the beneficiary. So it's not going to your parents, it's going to your spouse, that kind of stuff. Now, so you think through that level of it. And then you think through the next level. If I die and my spouse is not living, we both die in the same, in the same
car accident. Yeah.
Something happened, right? Then you think through, okay, not only do I have these asset issues and getting those to where they're supposed to go in the most efficient way, but I need someone to care for my kids. Mm-hmm. And I want my kids to get these assets, but they're not old enough to be able to manage them. And so what do I do? And in some ways, estate plans for parents can be the most complicated estate plan you might have in your whole life because of that added issue.
Of thinking through, who's going to take care of your kids and who's going to take care of the finances for the kids? Because it doesn't have to be the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. Yeah, I would say that sounds pretty, I don't have kids, so that sounds very complicated. And I've seen, people struggle with deciding on who.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a common barrier where people say, yeah, we know we should get an estate plan, but we just can't figure out who the guardian is. Mm-hmm. That's extraordinarily common.
But if they don't pick somebody and they don't have anybody, what happens?
You don't end up telling your opinion to the court. And when it comes to getting parents in place for children that don't have their parents, the court's going to be involved. But you want to tell the court your opinion on that. And if you don't do estate planning, you don't do that.
Yeah. So the court can appoint somebody and it might not be who.
Yeah. I mean, they just don't have your input and they have to figure it out on their own. And you really don't want that.
No, I would say I don't really want the court to decide anything for me. Any court, Minnesota, New York, I don't want anyone in the court deciding for me. Okay, so as a parent, it gets more complicated. You need to think through if your spouse is alive, spouse isn't alive, what happens with the kids. And then from that point on, and our listenership is younger, I would say then, but when you get into retirement, so maybe if we look at that from the kid's perspective, their parent is now 70s. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So when you're older, and you have adult children and you're just thinking through, okay, I need my assets to get to who they're supposed to get to in the most efficient way possible. That's your basic legal question. And then of course the likelihood that you might be incapacitated, likelihood's up a little bit because you might have dementia. You might have, you might have memory issues or things where you need those people to help you.
Or have a medical event like a heart attack and a stroke. That's not totally uncommon when you get old, when you're older.
For particular people, what their estate planning looks like can be different. So for some people, trust might be really important. And in many states, that's going to be true for most people. But for some people and in some places, maybe that's not necessary. So I kind of think about three factors in what makes up a particular estate plan. It's what does the law in your state, how do things play out, and what does the law let you do ahead of time?
Okay.
And that's so someone, so someone in California, Florida is better for me to talk about. So for someone in Florida, their estate plan might look vastly different than if they lived in Minnesota with the same, with all of the other factors.
And this is why you should not take advice from a colleague or a friend or a sibling, because they might live in a different state and be telling you something that's true for them, but not true for you.
Exactly. Yep. So here's an example of that. In Minnesota, we have the option of setting up your home to transfer automatically to people. It's awesome. And our law is extraordinarily clear that you don't need their permission to do anything. So if you sell your home and you've said, well, when I die, it goes to my kids, and you go to sell your home and downsize, you don't need your kids. You don't need your in-laws to come sign anything. You just sell it. Now, in Florida, they have that kind of deed, but I'm inactively licensed in Florida, so I'm dangerous down there. But from what I've been told, that's actually a title issue, that they do require the signatures. And so it's something that's hardly ever used. And so lots of people are homeowners, And for a homeowner that has an estate plan, also Florida probates tend to be a little bit like the expense of it tends to be higher than some other places. And so it's more, it gets to be more important to avoid probate, but they don't have as many options as, say, Minnesota does. So someone in Minnesota who maybe doesn't need a trust because they can get their assets to move automatically, if they move to Florida, they might need one.
Yep.
You know, so it just can be vastly different between states. The kinds of assets you have can make a big difference. Of course, if you have a taxable estate, you know, then your estate plan is going to look different than someone who doesn't. But if you have assets that need management right away, that can adjust your planning. And then finally, the people involved. If you have adult children who you trust implicitly, who get along well and didn't marry crazy, your plan might look different than someone whose kids don't get along or married crazy or can't manage assets, you know? So what your plan looks like is going to be very specific and tailored to you.
Yeah, I think that's a very key point. So I feel like a lot of people are always like, my sibling told me, or my friend told me. And so I'm going to do that too. And I'm like, no, you can't do the same thing. A lot of variables. So what would you say is the best way to get started with this?
Yeah, it can be a bit overwhelming.
Right. For
you know you need to do this, but how do you start, right? Now, I'm a huge advocate because it's a very tailored individual thing. I'm a really big advocate of working with an attorney, the licensed in the state that you live in, who is in who's where you're at. Because even between different parts of the state, things can play out
different. Different counties will play out differently.
Yep. Different courts can do things in slightly different ways. I'm a super huge advocate of that. But for most people, this is the only time they see an attorney. And so that can feel a little bit like going, you know, the first time you take your car to the mechanic and you're, you know, and you're
I found getting a car so intimidating the first time. Being in New York City for so long and I had to go get a car and I was like, I know I'm smart. I don't know why he's talking to me like I don't know what I'm an idiot. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like the first time I took a car to the mechanic and they're like, okay, here's the problem. I was like, well, I hope you know what you're talking about.
Right.
And I hope you're being honest with me. But I have no way to evaluate that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even before, ultimately, you should be reaching out to an attorney. But before that, a little bit of education is so helpful because then you have a better sense of like being able to communicate and evaluate what an attorney is recommending for you.
Absolutely.
So two things you can immediately do. First thing is my website, Organized Afterlife. I put it together because I continually see how important it is for people to understand the very basics of how this works. You don't have to understand tax law. You don't have to understand, you know, the ins and outs of probate, but you just have to have a basic understanding of how this can play out to be able to be an effective client with an attorney and get something that really works for your situation. So I have this website that helps give you that education.
Perfect.
And the next thing that you can do is start to understand what do I own and gather information so you can come to learn how you own it. So
like an inventory.
An inventory, yeah. Okay. I have a 401k and who's the beneficiary that I listed? I have a life insurance policy. Who did I list as beneficiary for that? What is my, you know, like get a copy of the deed to your house. Okay. So that when you go meet with that attorney, you can not only get a good estate plan, but you can get help to coordinate your assets to follow that plan, to make sure that things play out how the attorney strategizes the best way that would work for you. So so those two things, go to my website and you know, start to learn about how this works. And then start to think through what you own. Finally, I put together a workshop that's on my website where I walk people through each step they need to do, not only just to have documents, right? Because you get documents anywhere, and I see people with lots of documents still leave a mess. But
yes, because sometimes there's more than just the piece of paper. I call it the $3,000 binder, which is a lot of older people, unfortunately, are taken advantage of. They go to a seminar. It's usually marketed as a free steak dinner, something mm-hmm. like that. And then everybody in that room is offered the same estate plan.
The same plan.
Everybody gets the same binder, which to yes. me, like, that should be a red flag. Like, so many red flags.
Someone says everybody needs XYZ. That's a red flag.
Yes. Yeah. And they all leave with the binder. And then what you hear after is, oh, I have a trust. I have an estate plan. It's like, did you do anything other than write the check? And they're like, no. Right. And I'm like, you have a very, very expensive binder that everybody else in the room, so it's not even a unique binder. You don't even have a special binder. You have a common binder for $3,000 that does nothing for your estate plan.
Yeah. And here's why simply signing a trust doesn't do it, right? Why it's just like it's a $3,000 binder is because a trust, you sign this trust document, and really what a trust is, it's a set of rules about how you own something. But if your assets don't say they're following the rules, they're not following the rules. And so in estate planning, lawyers talk about a step of funding the trust.
Yes.
Right? Of like getting the assets that are supposed to follow those rules, whether it's through deeds or ownership documents or beneficiary designations or whatever, that particular asset says, yes, I'm following those rules. And I think about it in broader terms of not just trust funding, but even if you have a very simple plan, you want your assets to follow the plan. And that goes back to that deed with your spouse to make sure your deed is, you know, your house is owned in the right way so that it moves the way you want it to if something happens to one of you. And I call that financial organization, just as a general way of thinking of it. And honestly, that's the difference between people who leave a mess and people that don't, is they have a plan, a strategy that's particular to them that works for their situation, but then their assets actually follow the plan.
Step two, the fine print.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I did the workshop, because I saw so many people who had great plans, but they didn't keep up with the financial organization that the plan didn't actually happen. And so in the workshop, I go through the steps that I've seen people take who leave a manageable to-do list. And then I give you the information you need to know to be able to take that step. So the step to meet with an attorney, I talk about how do you vet attorneys? What are you looking for? You know, all of that stuff. And then you have your homework to go do. And then you come back, do the next step and learn about the next step, take that step. And then by the end of the workshop, you've gotten an estate
plan. Should be done.
you've taken the steps you need to take to get an effective estate plan done. And then you understand how to keep that plan working well.
Right. Because it's not like set it and forget it for 30 years.
Correct. Yep. And it may mean that your documents don't need to change for a long time. But as you get assets, you're thinking through, okay, how is this asset following the plan? Is it set up the way that asset needs to be set up?
Yeah, I think that's really great. Because I would say, looking at it from an advisor or from a CFP standpoint, I think the big issue is people go to the meeting with the attorney and then sometimes get documents, sometimes don't, and they have good intentions, but then it doesn't always materialize.
Exactly. Yep. And I can usually tell like the candidates who are going to leave a manageable to-do list. And they're the ones who come in and they're asking, okay, what about my beneficiary designations? How do those play into this? You know, and they're thinking through, okay, assets and how does that work? And when you're thinking of those questions, then you're thinking through the additional things you need to do beyond just getting documents.
Yeah, that's great. So we'll absolutely link that for our listeners, your website and then the workshop, because I also think vetting attorneys is really important. And I love that you are so education first, because it's a big decision. And just like the car mechanic or the car salesman, like, I don't want to be talked over or, you know, like talked at. So I think finding somebody, like knowing how to vet an attorney, is also critical, because you want to be with someone you trust and who's going to really listen to your concerns and create a custom plan for you.
Mm-hmm. And plans don't necessarily have to be like super expensive. Right. You know, depending on the situation, some people it's the cost of a washing machine. And it's something that you do not every year.
Right.
You do it once every handful of years or every, you know, 10 years or something like that. And it works really well. And it's strategized to minimize those legal issues.
And I would argue that if you do it up front, it's a fraction of the cost than if you leave a mess.
Absolutely.
Right? It's like a sale. Mm-hmm. It's like 50% off if you do it in advance.
50% off your legal issues.
Yes. It's 50% off if you plan in advance. If you do not create a plan, the state will be charging you double.
Correct.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Well, Jen, thank you so much for coming on. This was insightful.
Oh, great. I'm so glad to hear it. It was such a pleasure speaking with you.
So we will link, for all of our lovely listeners, we will link your website and your workshop so that you can all get your estate planning taken care of. This is a great project for 2022. So get organized. And also I would say if you're organized, I absolutely would check in with your parents to see if you can assist them mm-hmm. or make sure they
and
are
I should
organized.
Also plug, I have a video on my website about tips about talking to your parents about this.
We should link that.
Don'ts, you know, because I see a lot of these conversations and there are ways to go about it. That are productive, and there are ways to go about it that are very much not productive. So I have a video, completely free video on my website for that.
Perfect. So we will link that video because I think talking to me, if you were going to have a New Year's resolution, something to do in 2022, talking to your parents about their estate plan is a great thing. And so we'll link mm-hmm. that video because Absolutely. There are definitely, it makes sense that there are good ways to do that and bad ways to do that. So, well, thank you so much, Jen. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks so much.
Thank you to all of our lovely listeners. You can find our most up-to-date information on Instagram at Future Rich Podcast, and you can check out our website at www.futurerichpodcast.com.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.